So basically talking about what I've done in my PhD so far. So understand the acoustics of the heart and then trying to use that knowledge to develop a smart stethoscope. So let's start off with a bit of a quiz. Top five causes of death worldwide. What's number one? Hands up. Yep.
Alcohol.
No. So I've got the list here, the top 20. Substance abuse is 18, so a long way off. Number one, very good. Heart disease. Okay, what percent of the death does it cause?
31.
Ah, you were there before, 32. It's gone up since then, though. All right, number two. Yeah, very good. Half the amount. Okay, and then infectious diseases, chronic respiratory diseases, and diabetes, 6%. Okay, so we see that cardiovascular disease is by far the biggest cause of death worldwide. One in three deaths being caused by this. So, a significant public health issue that we need to address. And one of the key ways that we can address it is by providing early detection. Okay, so if we just go over the care pathway for cardiovascular disease, if you're in a high-income country such as the UK, US, you start off, if you think you have some problem, you'll go to your GP and they'll perform a physical exam, and they do a number of things for that, and one of the key things they do is listen to your heart with a stethoscope, and they can determine from what they're hearing whether you have any abnormalities with the valves in your heart, okay? The problem with that is that is actually quite difficult. So people really struggle to pick up these heart murmurs, and it's dependent on the user. So if you go straight to a cardiologist, you'll be probably fine, but GPs and medical students really struggle with this. And so I could kind of give you a load of stats of how bad people are at diagnosing this. And I'm actually slightly regretting doing what I actually did now, which is a meme I found on this Facebook page. So yeah, here it is. So this is how every cardiologist expects a student to describe a murmur, okay? And then this guy's, yeah, laying down some beats, so. And this has a bunch of likes, and so you can see this is a pain point for medical students, right? They really are struggling to get to the same level as cardiologists on detecting murmurs, okay? So if you're lucky enough that your GP picks up that you have a heart murmur, then you go for a scan at a specialist center. Okay, and although that's pretty accurate, it's expensive, it's time consuming, about 45 minutes to an hour to get one of those done, and it requires interpretation by a specialist. Okay, so, and then once you have your echocardiogram, they decide on what your treatment is. And so you can see there's kind of a gap here that if you're lucky enough to get this echocardiogram, you're fine, but we can't give everyone that because it's expensive, it's time consuming. And so we need a better early detection tool that's cheap and more ubiquitous. Okay, and when we go to low-income countries, the situation gets even worse because you have patient-doctor ratios up to 50,000 to one, okay? So you're basically not gonna be able to see your doctor if you think you have a heart disease, so this doesn't happen. There's barely any echocardiogram, which means you're not gonna get referred there and you don't get any treatment, okay? So this is an issue. So what we're focused on is the stethoscope, this tool that doctors are using. It was invented in 1816 and technologically hasn't advanced for 201 years. It requires an experienced doctor to use it, which is a problem in low-income countries when you can't get access to that sort of doctor. And it can be inaccurate in the wrong hands, so using medical students and the like are struggling to use it properly. Okay, so what we kind of propose is a smart stethoscope, so invented around about now, can be used by anyone. So as long as you can get a recording of the heart, it will basically take that recording and then analyze your heart sounds and determine whether you have a murmur or not. And this has the potential to be very accurate. And that's just a mock-up of what it would look like. So basically a standard stethoscope, the doctor's still using in the same way. And basically this onboard processing will provide a second ear that they can use if they're struggling. Okay? So in order to develop that, we're first trying to understand what the different heart sounds are that are being produced. What are the abnormalities? What are the characteristics of those? And so, just as a start, we'll go through how the heart functions normally and what sound it creates. Okay, so we can start anywhere, start in this point in the cycle. And we've got the atrium at the top, That's what takes in blood from the lungs on the left side, and then that pumps it down to the ventricle and then out of the rest of the body. So if we start off here, that process where the atrium fills up the ventricle, the valve opens really wide, the flow is really slow, and there's barely any sound. Okay, and once the pressures kind of equalize between those two, the atrium contracts to push the last little bit of blood it has in it left through that valve. And that again produces no sound, the valve's really wide, and so the flow's really slow, and so you basically can't hear anything. Okay, so now you've filled up the ventricle, the atrium's kind of empty, and so that then relaxes, dropping the pressure in that top atrium, which means the valve then shuts. And when those leaflets hit together, that creates a sound that you can then hear, and this is called the S1 sound. Okay, so your ventricle is now full, and we need to get the blood out to the rest of the body through the aorta. So it contracts like that, pushes it out through the aorta to the rest of the body. Okay, and again, that process is fairly silent, assuming your valve is opening fully, the flow isn't that fast, and so you don't get much sound. And then after it's pushed as much blood as it can out, it relaxes, drops the pressure in the atrium, those two valves hit together, create a sound. This one then opens again because the pressure down here is low, and then the whole process repeats roughly once every second. Okay, so that's how we're functioning normally, and that final one is called S2 sound. And so when we listen for the heart sound, we're listening for these two major heart sounds, and then the issues will come in between there. So if we just listen to what it sounds like, this is a normal sound. Okay, so we have the two heart sounds that you hear and basically nothing in between. So what happens when you have abnormalities? Okay, so this is the most common valvular disease, and it's called aortic stenosis. So again, in a normal heart, you pump blood out to the rest of the body, your valve opens fully, kind of looks like that from the top, and the flow is slow that you can't really hear anything. But the issue you have in aortic stenosis, you get calcium deposits on the leaflet, and so it doesn't open fully. Okay, it looks kind of like this. And so if you've got that, it's a bit of a problem because your heart has to work much harder, and eventually it's going to lead to heart failure. Okay, and what happens with that is because you have to still push the same amount of blood out to your body to get it working, then you get a much faster jet through that narrow valve, which creates a sound that you can hear. So if we listen to that sound, this is kind of what it sounds like. So you see every heart cycle, it's working really hard to push that blood out to the rest of the body, okay? And so what we wanted to try and do was work out what was going on with that sound. And so kind of set up a rig. So this is, some of you might have seen this, it's just a huge tank at the top. The water gets fed down through these pipes, measure the flow, Venturi tube. And then there's a bunch of pressure sensors here. You mount valves of various diameters in here, and it goes around and back to the bottom. Okay, so this is kind of a schematic of what's going on. So from that tank, the water comes in and down and in there. We vary the diameter of that valve for different runs. You get a bunch of turbulence which convects downstream, and we measure at each location downstream what the unsteady pressure is. Okay, so the results we got from that were, look something like this. So the bottom left, we've got the valve that opens fully. There's pretty much hardly any sound. And as you go higher and higher up this graph, it tends towards something that looks more like this, more stenosed. And so basically, yeah, we kind of focus in this region, sort of 150 to 500 hertz. So you can see that as you go up the to more and more, it's lower and lower diameter, more and more stenosed valve, the amplitude of the sound between this 150 and 500 hertz is much higher. So then what we tried to do is just see if we could get a collapse. So that's what it looks like. I apologize, this is a log graph, so it's a bit of a cheat, but if you go through each scale, it does collapse fairly well. And so we get a collapse when we scale the frequency, the diameter of the valve, and the free stream flow, which I'll kind of explain later. And then you get another collapse with the pressure, which I can't actually explain. So these are results. So D is the diameter of the valve. UJ is the speed of the jet coming out. big U is the speed of the mainstream flow once the jet is reattached to the tube. And then the frequency that we find scales with this big U, the free stream flow over D. And so kind of and we're measuring at the point of highest pressure. So that's basically the nearest one to where it reattaches to the pipe. And so you get basically a bit of turbulence, this is how we think we explain it. So a bit of turbulence scales with roughly size D for the valve that's generated here. It convects downstream. And when it actually passes this sensor, it's traveling at speed U, the free stream velocity. So that's why we think the frequency scales like that. And then the pressure, we kind of got a bit surprised by what was happening here. So it's this rho U squared, as you kind of see. So I did that, it didn't collapse, so I was like, oh dear, that's not ideal. And then times it by D over D, and magic, it sort of works. So we're not entirely sure why that is. D could be a proxy for this length or whatever, but I couldn't really work it out. So if you've got any bright ideas, please let me know. Okay, so there's a bunch of other valve diseases. So as I said, aortic stenosis is the most common one. So 34% of all valve diseases are this aortic stenosis, where your valve doesn't open properly and you get a sound. And then another disease which happens in that same phase of the heart cycle where it's pumping blood out to the rest of the body is mitral regurgitation, okay? So this time your valve opens fully, but this guy is not doing very well. So basically the high pressure in here causes this valve to bulge up, creating a gap, okay? And if you have a small gap there, you get kind of slow flow out as you would normally, but also you get fast flow out here, which generates some characteristic sound. And so ideally we'd like to be able to determine between the two, but because they happen in the same phase of the heart cycle, it's gonna be a bit tricky. And this is, 24% of the valve diseases, this mitral regurgitation. And then you get some in the other phase of the heart cycle where the ventricle relax and then the ventricle fills up from the atrium. So if that relaxes, this bottom bit here, that opens that valve, but basically mitral stenosis is when that valve doesn't open properly. And so it's kind of the same as aortic stenosis, but in a different part of the cycle, you get a fast jet through there and a murmur. And then the same again with regurgitation. If this valve doesn't close properly, it goes back through there. And so those are basically the two ways in all of your heart valves that they can fail. Either they regurgitate, which means flow goes the wrong way when it shouldn't, or it's stenosis, in which case it's difficult to pump the blood out to the rest of the body. Okay, and these are less common, so about 10% of the valve diseases are each of these ones. And then if you are listening carefully, it doesn't actually add up to 100. The other 20% is some combination of all of them, or some of them. Okay. So one of the things we tried to look at was a specific mitral regurgitation murmur called this precordial honk. Okay, and this is kind of a strange one. It's not that common. But it was kind of interesting to look at from like a flow structure interaction problem. So you've got the same thing with mitral regurgitation where you pump blood out to the rest of the body, but some of it regurgitates back the wrong way. But now, for some reason, you get some vibration in the valve, which creates a sound. Okay, and no one really knows why this is. And so we've tried to investigate it. So this is what it sounds like. This is the normal one. And then the precordial honk, hopefully you'll hear a fairly tonal sound in between the two heart sounds here. Okay, so listen carefully. Okay, so that's a fairly tonal sound that's coming from the valve vibration due to this regurgitation. So we tried to test this starting off with air just to see if we could get some mechanism for what is going on when this flow regurgitates. So essentially, we suck air through this tube, have sort of an overlap with the two valves. And as we increase the flow, the valve prolapses kind of further and further into the tube until you get to some flow where eventually it starts to vibrate, okay? So there's some critical speed or critical pressure difference at which that eventually happens. Okay, so here's a nice video of what happens. So at the moment, it's just I'm slowly increasing the speed. And this thing is bulging a bit further in. And I should probably have cropped that video further. There we go. So that was just me slowly increasing the speed, and then at some point that happens, and so we try and determine what is going on here, what's the effect of changing the length, the thickness of the bow, upload a bunch of other stuff. Okay, and I've got a kind of slow motion video of this here. So this is actually before the thing starts to transition. So it's kind of moving around a bit, but these vibrations aren't growing. And hopefully you see eventually that this this will sort of grow into quite large amplitude oscillations. So it's kind of growing now. And then now it's, yeah, this is when it's really creating some noise. Okay, so we tried to investigate this as well. And we started off thinking maybe it's acoustic resonance. So down the pipe, you'll get some standing wave, which could excite the valve to do that. Unfortunately, that turned out to be wrong. So we tried another one, going through the 4A10 coursing causes of instability. Could it be vortex shedding? So you get a vortex which, when it gets a similar frequency to the natural frequency of the valve, you get a lock-in and the thing starts to vibrate. Unfortunately, it wasn't that as well. So then we look at negative damping, seeing if any of the terms could be negative damping. No dice. And then now looking at a similar mechanism to the flapping of a flag. So when you get two modes that couple, as you increase the speed, that can then turn to instability. So we're kind of looking at previous papers on the flag and trying to apply that to this. The flow here is a bit more complicated, so that's currently a work in progress. And so we kind of understand a bit about how the valves create sound. And so what we wanted to do with that is saying, if we can work out what state of the valve causes what sound, can we do the reverse? So if you pick up a sound with a stethoscope, can you then diagnose someone with a murmur? Okay. And so how do we go about doing this? So if we start off with a sound signal that looks like this, it's kind of difficult to tell what's going on. So we extend this into the time frequency domain. So a bunch of ways of doing that, using PSD or filtering and enveloping the signal to do that. And the reason we do that is if we look at these two signals, this is one for a normal heart and one for aortic stenosis. And you'd be lying if you told me you could tell the difference from this these two signals. Right, but extending it into time frequency and looking at the region I was talking before, 150 to 500 hertz, you can see now that you can see the amplitude in the correct part of the heart cycle that then starts to show up. Okay, so what we do with that is using these time frequency representations of the heart sound, we feed it into a machine learning algorithm that will then tell you whether you have a normal heart or whether you have a murmur. Okay, so what this thing does is basically if you take a signal like this, it will detect the various parts of the heart cycle, basically the most likely heart sound signal that you can get out of your recording that you take. And so this one is a sort of normal recording that is fairly easy to work out. And so it would basically find the two peaks and which one is which, S1 and S2, find the points in between, and tell you what you need to know about the heart. And it would give you a diagnosis that is normal. And then you come up with one with a murmur, it does kind of the same thing, picks out the bit, but now in this region, this systolic region, you can see this high frequency bit. So it's able to detect that and then tell you a murmur and how strong the murmur is. And then also what it can do is if you feed in garbage like this, then it will try and segment it. But it will say, this looks nothing like any heart sound I've seen before in my sort of training phase. And so it will just tell you, it's a bad signal, I can't do anything with that. Okay, so that's kind of where we are now. And so this is just a demonstration of how accurate we are using this system. So we've basically got a graph that we can plot all the signals on. So we've got abnormal at the bottom, where your valve looks kind of like that, and normal at the top, where your valve kind of looks like that, and you really don't want to be too far below the line. Okay, so if I plot on, and you can also have an estimate of signal quality as well, so the better quality recordings are further right. Okay, so if I plot on all the normal signals, roughly above the line, a few kind of close, a few which are causing me some problems, but it's kind of good. And then the abnormal signals, again, similar trend with a few causing me a problem. So the overall accuracy of this is about 95% in detecting murmurs. Okay, so having got this graph, the first thing I decided to do was test myself. And so here's what it sounds like. Okay, so that wasn't great. I'll turn up for the next ones. But that's what my heart sounded like. And fortunately, I was in the top half of the graph. And I'm also really quite good at recording, having done this for a long time. So that's good. And so obviously not just worried about myself. So we've got Max. Thanks for coming. I told him, please take a recording and I'll tell you later. How are you? So this is Max's recording. Faster the heart rate, yeah, he should be nervous. No, so Max is fine as well. He's not quite as good at recording as me, but there we go. So then we've got two fairly young, healthy volunteers there. And so I decided to go up the food chain a bit. So someone very reluctant to give me any data at all, based on where he would end up in this graph. So I gave him the stethoscope. Right, so that's Anurag's heart. And lucky enough, he is also fine. But again, also not so good at recording. So yeah, that's kind of where we are now. So future work, so extend the predictive capacity of the software. So you know I showed you a thing where you can have loads of different types of valve disease that create loads of different murmurs, different times in the heart cycle, different sounds they produce, and so currently all we say is, you know, do you have a systolic murmur or not? So can you extend that to the other phase of the heart cycle? And then beyond, can you say if you've got a murmur, is it this one? Is it aortic stenosis? Is it mitral regurgitation? How bad is it? Stuff like that. Build the first prototype. So we're trying to build this as a medical device. So you put that software on board, a stethoscope that a doctor can then use, not only as a regular stethoscope, but they can then, if they need help, press record, stop record, and then it will immediately give you an estimate of whether you have a murmur and how strong it is, and that will kind of help inform their diagnosis. And then we're trying to sort of pattern the process and get regulatory approval to then get that through to actually be used. So yeah, acknowledgements. A load of people helped me along the way. Number one, Anurag, thanks a lot. He's my supervisor, and yeah, it's done a great job, and yada yada. Andrew as well. Andrew's fourth year was on this sort of stuff, and we'd be unlikely to be at this sort of stage without the work that he did in his master's project, and he's now carrying on doing all that future work I just showed you while I'm chilling. Papworth Hospital, so we've got two of the leading cardiologists in the country helping us, so they obtained ethical approval to get recordings of sound so you can actually train the algorithm, and they're sort of going to help us when we build the prototype to validate it and tell us what's good, what's bad, and how we can get there. So that's really good. And then a few people from Cambridge Enterprise as well, who have really helped us just work out exactly what we need to do in terms of obtaining regulatory approvals to get this as a medical device. Okay, so apart from that, there is actually a reason that I signed up for this a week before it came out, and not just because it's nice to give the first talk and stuff. So the reason is this guy. Anurag went for a session at a thing called Pitch at Palace, okay, where you pitch your technology to a bunch of people, including the Duke of York, and then they decide they're basically a winner. And it kind of helps you get to know people who have done this, so stuff in medical devices or any other realm. Okay, and while at Pitch at Palace, he decided it would be a good idea to say, we've got this this prototype, so what we'll do when we go to St. James's Palace to do it, we're going to set up a clinic. And so we can basically take all your heart sounds and tell you if it's wrong. So this is kind of a relatively untested device, and I'm not very good at using it so far, apart from myself. And so I'd really appreciate if people would come and basically offer up their hearts so I can record them and make sure that I know how to record them and I'm able to get a good signal. And then hopefully I can tell you whether you need to go to the GP or not. So either now or you know, come and get me in my desk. That'd be great. So thank you very much. And there is no specific definition. You just kind of look where the peak is and either side where it starts to look like it's calmed down to the next phase. Hi.
What was your capital D? Was it the distance down the...
Capital D, sorry, there. That was the width of the tube. So we haven't actually varied that. So it's, you know, just we need to either, you know, varying that is kind of difficult because we need to create like four or five new rigs. So yeah, it was just an estimate of the size of the valve relative to the width of the tube downstream.
Where are you measuring it? Does it depend upon where you measure it downstream? Because you've got a jet, yeah, and so the jet's going to be expanding.
Yeah, so we always measure at the closest point to where it reattaches to the wall, so basically the maximum signal at those nine locations. Yes. So basically, the idea was we kind of started with this fundamental research. We started at the end. Okay. So once we have this thing to detect murmurs, then in theory, if you could detect the type of murmur, then you can use stuff that I was doing with aortic stenosis to analyze the exact frequency, and then that would tell you what diameter your valve is based on that scaling law. But we don't have enough data from those specific type of valve disease to do that stuff yet. So at the moment, that hasn't kind of informed too much of the machine learning stuff, but we hope like when it gets better, it will be useful.
Any other questions? I was going to ask one. What determines if a signal is like good or bad? Like, what affects that?
What affects? It's basically whether you can pick out those salient features, the S1, the S2, or whether there's a murmur there. So it's just based on can a doctor do it.
More about the end product as such. So you're trying to make something that fits onto a stethoscope. Could you not use like a regular cell phone because it's got all the processing stuff built in?
Yeah, so that's what you're going to see when you come to my clinic.
Okay.
This is a stethoscope with a T-piece in it. It's a microphone, connects to my phone, and then that runs the software. Okay, but the reason we don't want to do that is because doctors are very limited on time. So if you can't, you obviously wouldn't want too many wires in it. So if you can't then pair your phone with the stethoscope, it's like, oh, I can't be bothered, I'll just use my ears, I'm fine. Or whereas if you have it all on board, it's a single medical device. Basically, we think that would be better.
I was sort of wondering if you could make an equivalent sort of thing, like say people don't have access to a doctor with a stethoscope, and they have a cell phone. Could you... effectively make an app-based version if you can get a decent enough recording with the phone itself?
Yeah, but it shouldn't be that expensive to get it all on board. But yeah, so the difficulty with doing that is that it's a lot harder to get a good recording if you can't hear at the same time.
Yeah.
And again, to use this, you need to be trained in exactly where to put it on the heart. And so that training is easier than the whole, you know, 6-year medical school, learn to detect murmurs, all that stuff. So we hope that that still be useful. So we haven't built the proto yet, so that's still like to be confirmed. So we're doing it with just like a lapel mic, so basically what I'm wearing now. But it could be better.
You said that you have a 95% efficiency. Is that with the training data, or is it
That's the test data, but it's kind of similar on the training data as well, so it's not too much overfitting.
Any other questions? I don't think so. Yeah, thank you again for presenting the talk.